Then in a deep voice, it belonged to a great tusked and shaggy boar, spoke out from another part of the crowd. "But why can't we see Aslan properly and talk to him?" it said. "When he used to appear in Narnia in the old days, everyone could talk to him face to face." "Don't you believe that nonsense," said the ape. "And even if it was true, times have changed. Aslan says he's been far too soft with you before, do you see? Well, he isn't going to be soft anymore. He's going to lick you into shape this time. He'll teach you to think he's a tame lion." A low moaning and whimpering was heard among the beasts, and after that a dead silence, which was more miserable still. What you've just heard is an excerpt from the C.S. Lewis classic, The Last Battle. Good morning, this is Anthony Mincarelli, and it is my turn for a 1 Samuel podcast. So this morning we're going to do 1 Samuel chapter 4, 1 through 22. Now I wanted to start with Narnia first. And if you're unfamiliar with the world of Narnia, just a quick summary of it. So C.S. Lewis wrote a series of books, a fictional, and he created this world called Narnia. And within that world, there is like a Jesus figure by the name of Aslan. And in the story, Aslan is very much like you would expect Jesus to be. He's kind, he's loving, he's ferocious in the best sort of way. And so in the last battle is the last of the books that C.S. Lewis has written. There's this character named Shift, and Shift is an ape. And so you just heard an interaction between Shift and the rest of the Narnian beasts. And so Shift is, as you expect his name to say, he's kind of shifty. And so he doesn't believe in Aslan. He really has no respect for Aslan, for God, or for any of the other animals. Shift really just cares about Shift. And so one day, Shift stumbles upon this old lion's skin, and he gets this dark idea in his head. So Shift has this friend who's more of a whipping boy than a friend, a donkey named Puzzle, who is pretty gullible. And he talks Puzzle into putting this lion's skin on. And then Shift parades this fake lion around and has Puzzle, the now covered in lion skin, stand at a distance, and Shift tells all the animals it's Aslan. Aslan's come back, and Shift is now the voice of Aslan. And so Shift tells them that Aslan wants all these things. He wants nuts and berries and fruit back to him, but really it's just things that Shift wants, because Shift is pretty selfish. And all of a sudden, all sorts of destruction continues because Shift is acting as this mouthpiece of God when he doesn't know God and he doesn't know Aslan, but he is just speaking for himself, and it's causing all sort of pain and hardship. I feel like that story just intermeshes really well with this story in 1 Samuel. So over the past couple of days, we've been following the characters of Samuel and Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, and just hearing how this tale is unfolding. And so we actually step away from their story for a second and look into the story of the wider nation of Israel. So that's where we're at. So it's chapter 4. Now, so I'm just going to kind of give a summary. What happens is the nation of Israel has gone out to battle against the Philistines, and the Philistines just whoop them. It says that 4,000 Israel foot soldiers lay dead. The Israelites, they come back to their camp and they're moaning and they're griping, and their elders are saying, "Why has God defeated us at the hands of the Philistines?" Whether this is actually what happened or not, the text doesn't really say, but that's how these Israelites are interpreting this situation. And so as they are figuring out what to do next, they're kind of in a desperate spot, trying to think like, well, we have to go fight them again. What are we going to do? Some of the elders get in their head, let's go grab the Ark of the Covenant, that holy thing, and let's bring that in. We will have that lead us into battle. God will lead us into battle, and we will defeat these Philistines. So they send some men. They go to Shiloh, which is where Eli and Hophni and Phinehas and Samuel are located, and they get the Ark, and they have Hophni and Phinehas bring it to the battlefield. And this time, they are sure this is it. They're going to beat those Philistines. So they march into battle with the Ark of the Covenant going before them. And the Israelites are just destroyed at the hands of the Philistines. This time, it says 30,000 Israelite foot soldiers lay dead. Among those are Hophni and Phinehas, Eli's sons. More destruction on top of that. The Ark of the Covenant is stolen, taken from the battle as spoils by the Philistine army. And one of the survivors from the battle, it says a Benjamite, goes back to Eli and tells him this bad news. Not only are your sons dead, but the Ark of the Covenant has been captured. And it says that Eli is an old guy. He's kind of a bigger guy, maybe. He loses his footing and his balance. He falls back and he breaks his neck. And so there we have it, the prophecy that Samuel had spoken just a chapter before about Eli and his sons coming to an end has happened, but the destruction continues, right? So Phinehas has a wife who is pregnant, and when she gets the news that her husband is dead and her brother-in-law is dead and her father-in-law is dead and the Ark of the Covenant has been taken by the Philistines, she immediately goes into labor. And so she has this baby and she is now about to die in childbirth. So the midwives at the time, they tell her, like, rejoice, you have a son. And they're telling her this on her deathbed. And she just ignores him. And she pronounces this proclamation, this little bit of meaning about this whole story. And she calls the boy Ichabod, saying the glory has departed from Israel. So that's 1 Samuel chapter 4. It is not a happy story. It does not end with us feeling encouraged and uplifted. It ends with a lot of pain and heartache and destruction. And so when I first read this, I'm like, what? Where are we going to go with this? And at first glance, I thought this was a story about trying to use God's power without knowing God. Because it starts with the Israelites grabbing this Ark of the Covenant, and they don't even like have a conversation with God. They ask this question of why has God beat us in battle at the hands of the Philistines, but it's more of a rhetorical question. It's not asked to God. They don't wait for a response. No one goes up and says, hey, God, what should we do this? Should we take this Ark? And then they just get wrecked and destroyed. But I did a little bit more reading and learned that this was actually like this was a logical thing for the Israelites to do, because this is pre-Jesus times. And so sometimes I know I can get really comfortable with the understanding of like I have this relationship with Jesus. I can ask him questions. I can hear him answer me sometimes. And I forget that in the experience of these ancient Israelites, it was still at a time where your relationship with God was mediated between the priests and God. And from all of the stories that they heard, the presence of God existed in the Ark of the Covenant. So they've just had this battle, they lost, and so they think, well, we need to win. We need God on our side. Let's go get the presence of God. Let's have the presence of God go before us. What happened in the story is that because Eli and Phinehas and Hophni chose to drop the ball on this responsibility of being these shepherds for Israel, all sorts of destruction continued because of that. Many people died because these three did a terrible job representing God. How they lived their life mattered. It had consequences. Okay, so that's all well and good, but what do we do with that? What does it matter to us that Hophni and Phinehas and Eli messed up royally and it cost a bunch of people their lives? I think what has changed is it's no longer these few people who are the intermediaries between the people and God. That it says in 1 Peter chapter 2 that we are a royal priesthood. That because of Jesus, like we all get to have this wonderful relationship with God. That the Holy Spirit lives within us. And so now instead of there just being a few folks within this nation who are the priests and can hear on behalf of God, like all of us get to hear on behalf of God, and all of us get to be priests, get to be representatives of God to a whole big world that is aching for him. And thus, how we live our life matters. How we live our life has consequences. And we see this. We heard Erica talk a couple weeks ago about spiritual abuse, and we can all probably easily think of people operating under the name of Christian, perpetuating hate or making choices that cause destruction in the world around them. How we live matters. Our choices have consequences, especially if we are representing God to a world who is desperate and aching for them. I know, having experiences for myself, that so Jessica and I have been married 11 years now. And earlier within our marriage, I've always been in a position of youth ministry. I've always gotten to have some sort of leadership. And early on, I was not a very good leader. I had a lot of insecurities, and that would play out in defensiveness. And so Jessica would routinely be someone who would serve within these ministries that I was leading. And she is a very competent, wonderful person who has wonderful ideas. And she'd bring these ideas to me, and I'd get really defensive. And I'd have a hard time hearing these ideas, especially if they might have been contrary to what we were already doing. And not only would I get defensive, but sometimes I'd get angry. And then sometimes we'd get in these heated discussions about that. Now, this was early on, probably in the first 4 or 5 years of our marriage. We're on year 11 now, and I'm still navigating the consequences of how I led. That to this day, when Jessica is bringing ideas to me, sometimes she has to say, Anthony, I'm a little concerned you're going to get defensive. I feel like I might be walking on eggshells a little bit, because she's still learning to trust that I've grown as a leader, that I'm able to hear her better. And I like, praise the Lord, I am. I'm able to listen a lot better when she brings ideas, even confrontational ones to me. But because of how I handled things 10, 9 years ago, there's been consequences that have carried themselves out. How I live, it matters. It has consequences. Now, as I bring this up, I don't want us to live anxiously thinking that, oh my goodness, every decision I make, I need to think through it to make sure that I'm not going to mess up and cause some big domino effect of negative consequences. Because we have something that Hophni and Phinehas, they didn't have. That it says in Hebrews 4 that we have a high priest. That Eli was their high priest. He was the head guy that was supposed to be like holding them accountable and saying, hey guys, that's not a good idea. Or hey guys, let's get to know God better, because clearly you don't. And I see you doing some negative things as part of that. That we have a high priest who is Jesus. And our relationship with Jesus, he is going to be that one that steps in and says, hey, Anthony, I love you and you're wrong right now. Or Anthony, hey, you may disagree with Jessica's idea, but you still need to listen. Be humble. Trust me. I've got you. It's going to be okay. There's this verse in Micah chapter 6. It's thrown around a lot. I really love it. I think it's a really good one. It's seek justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. So since we've chosen to follow Jesus, we've been given this awesome responsibility. We get to represent him to this world around us that is filled with hurt and pain, and it's desperately aching for him. And we have this privilege of partnering with our God to bring about his kingdom and his reign here. But that means that how we live, it matters. And it matters especially as we do bear the name of Christ wherever we go. But that shouldn't be something that fills us with fear of failure. Instead, it should be this encouragement that draws us back to our high priest over and over again. Humbly going before Jesus and saying, Jesus, I'm trying my best, but I know that I have a tendency to mess up sometimes, and I don't want to create a domino effect of negative consequence. Like, I don't want to hurt the people around me, but I know that you are good, and I know that you love me, and I know that you love these people around me, so please lead me forward. Please lead us forward so that your will may be done and your kingdom may come in this world, and I just get to be a part of it. Because like Hophni and Phinehas, we are in positions of authority because we follow Jesus. But unlike them, we have a high priest who loves us dearly and loves us so much that he's going to keep us from going negative ways, especially if we keep going before him and saying, oh, Jesus, please help me. I'm just trying to figure this out the best I can. I want to encourage us to take a moment and think about all of the roles, all of the relationships that we occupy in our life. Because when we have relationships with people, we have some sort of influence within that. And I want to ask that you pick the one that you have the most tension in your heart as you think about, the one that probably has the most conflict in it. And I want to encourage us to go before Jesus sometime today and just talk to him about it. Tell him how you're honestly feeling about that relationship, about that role. ask for his help, ask for his clarity in it, and then wait and listen and see what he says. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great day.